Hey, I know you've heard me talk about trust-driven care, and I know you heard me talk about why it's so important, but let me tell you this. One of the aspects that just seems so small that is such a big deal with our software, trust-driven care, is the ability to communicate with your patients. Now, when I say communicate, I mean have a two-way conversation. That is way different than just sending out appointment reminders via text message. That sounds like communication, but I'll challenge you to this. Imagine if you could only send one-way communication to your spouse for a week, and imagine how frustrated they would be if they can't respond to you. Your patients are feeling the same way. I don't know why we ever started this idea that we should send one-way communication to patients that they can't respond to. So don't be that provider. In fact, why don't you become a provider that allows for two-way communication, text messaging? You can respond, they can respond. But let's take it one step further. What if somebody submits a question on your website? Could you immediately start a back and forth conversation with them? We've added that into trust-driven care. Now, let's say somebody leaves you a review on Google and they have a question or they have something where they don't understand what happened. You could engage them in a conversation and quell any of their fears. The end goal, of course, is always to make sure that they become a patient or they're a patient who gets more appointments. Why? Because that's why we're in this game, to help provide the right care to the right people at the right time. And when they're asking questions, usually means there's something going on. Trust-driven care allows for two-way text communication, along with email, along with surveys, along with forms, along with Google My Business integration, along with website chat widgets. It's all there so that you can run a better practice that communicates, grows, and has a massive impact in your community. Hey, welcome to Clinic Gym Radio. This is Dr. Josh Satterlee, and I'm excited for you to be on this journey. Look, when I started my Clinic Gym Hybrid back in 2013, I didn't have a place to go for resources. That's why we're doing this podcast. That's why we're here. I hope you dig this interview. Let's jump in. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of Clinic Gym Radio. I am your host, as always, Dr. Josh Satterlee, and I'm over the moon today to be joined by business consultant extraordinaire, Ildi Arlette. Ildi, how are you?
Excellent, Josh. Excited to be here.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to have you. Ildi, for those who don't know, and I think that a lot of our folks who don't probably know you yet, but Ildi is one of the most popular, well-known consultants in the world of med spas. And I especially wanted to have her on because one thing that I think med spas get they are clear about more than any other profession in healthcare is because they never use insurance, you never bill insurance, you can't get lazy on patient experience. And I would say as a general rule, med spas have an incredible patient experience because we're paying for cash. We're playing for cash in the big leagues here, right? And the ability to rebook a client, you know, in a year's time, a med spa, the lifetime value of a client over like a 1 to 2 year period, maybe $20,000, right? We don't see that in chiropractic. And I don't think our physical therapy friends see that. Like we're talking in a chiropractic visit in or a chiropractic office, 1 to 2 years in, you're talking about $1,000 to $2,500, right? So it's a significantly different scale. But I think that what that also does, you know, I would love to get the insights from you because I think you have discovered what doesn't work and what does. You know, there's like when you're opening an office, I always heard like, find out what Starbucks is doing in your area because they have a team of people doing it. And you could never afford that team of people, but just follow them and you'll go to the popular areas, you know?
Yeah.
And I think with med spas, you guys are you're that big team of people. Like you've invested hundreds of thousands of dollars into this. So you know the world of healthcare. On the flip side, you also know the pain of pissing off one client and wiping that out. Whereas I think in chiropractic, again, like if you wipe out a client that was worth $400, you may not know at the end of the month or the end of the year, certainly, how bad you screwed up. And so you don't correct your behavior fast enough. You know, I think you guys play with big enough stakes that it's painful. Yeah. So
well, thanks for boosting the whole field.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great. Can you take us through your history real quick? Like, how did you even get into the consulting side and where does your knowledge base for healthcare come from?
Yeah, the quick story is that I started out doing customer service training and my business case then and now is that it doesn't matter what you do. All that matters is how you serve people. That's what's going to win the game, period.
All right.
So I, of course, where is customer service most prominent? In hotels and restaurants.
Right.
I was really lucky to work with some real, I would consider them high-end restaurants, and then mid-level hotels, which then eventually became luxury hotels. And I had a very humbling experience with my first big client, like literally, you know, where you, you know, wanted to frame. You remember when you used to get a check in the mail and get paid?
Yeah. Or you see people's one first dollar, their business dollar, got framed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the dollar bill did actually exist back then, because we're talking in the 90s now.
Yeah.
And one of my very first big clients was a mid-level hotel chain. And there were 6 properties. And my job was to improve their customer service scores. Everything that you would logically think, you know, increase referrals, increase repeat business, increase stays per visit, increase spend per stay, all the things. The only thing we wanted to reduce was complaints, but everything else needed to increase. And what was so interesting is I very quickly, in a 1-year project, learned and saw a pattern in the second month, which was, and I'll form it around a question, how is it that the same person can do the training with the same material to the same brand, and that brand has the same everything, same hiring process, same binders on the shelf, same uniform, same manager role, same job
right. description. I could blindfold you and drop you in one of your different locations, and nothing's going to change.
Exactly, templated. So how come then the same people and brand getting the same information from the same source didn't produce the same results? So how did the results go on a graph for your listeners?
Yeah.
They went that 4 of the properties did extremely well. Those businesses did well right away. We would meet once a month for a training session over a 12-month period. And it was my job to plot it on the graph. And we saw right away 4 did really well. 1 sort of did well, plateaued, did worse, but then caught up to the other ones, always was behind the other 4, but the trajectory was still up.
Yep.
So that was the 5th one. But the 6th one, Josh, it tanked. That graph was going in the wrong direction.
It wasn't just the same, even though you were training. It actually got worse.
Yes. Yes.
That's crazy. Yeah, you're investing time and energy and you're getting negative results.
Well, exactly. So now, for context, I'm in my late 20s. It's the 90s. And I'm all caught up, not in the 5 that are doing extremely well. That would actually end up being a real pinnacle in my career. I was focusing on the one that was tanking and not doing well and worse. So I would call that ego. I would definitely call it inexperience. And you know, just like the typical person, I applied more effort to the one property that was doing poorly. So what I learned from that experience, like really quickly, which led to the business that I have today, was noticing 2 trends. 1 was leadership issues, that the leader is literally in the way of the business and in the way of progress. And I know that sounds harsh and critical, and I know it's a 2-sided coin that we can also be the biggest catalyst. Mm-hmm. But I know you and I were even talking before you hit record that we can get in the way of our business to the tune of staggering its progress to like epic proportions. Like too bad we can't make money from, you know, perfectionism and self-sabotage and overwhelm and all of it. So leadership issues was 1. And the 2nd one was team dynamics. So not only how people got along, but more from a systems point of view and a team dynamic point of view of how people function together. I had no expertise in those 2 areas because I was and am a customer service specialist, which is all the vocabulary-wise the same as guest service, patient service, client service, services serving. So I did have some really great mentors around me, and they said, Ildi, I think you're on to something. I know some people who specialize in leadership and team development. I can introduce you. And I was successful in business early and could afford to hire people to come in with that expertise. I added to my team so that I didn't have to pretend that I knew something I didn't. And put sort of this trinity together around customer service training, leadership development, and team development. And I did that for quite a few years. And it was that combination that had me as fate would have it, do a session one day. Someone said, Ildi, would you come and do a service excellence half day training for us? For it was all kinds of businesses. It was just a room full of, our commonality was they were business people. And at the 10:15 break, two women ran up to me with business cards because it was 2003. But I say, keep the business cards forever. Yeah. Two women run up to me with those business cards and these are our cards. We'd love to talk with you. We work with doctors and in doctors' offices and clinics. And we love everything you had to say. And we'd love to talk with you about how you might be able to help us. One woman was what it was then and now, one of the leading medical aesthetic clinics in Canada, in Toronto. And the other one worked for the manufacturer of Botox and what was to become fillers. Mm-hmm. And about 60 or 90 days later, I had talked with the main supplier of the industry, that vendor, and we had put together a two-year practice development series for physicians where you would attend once every 6 to 8 weeks, and we would build on your skills over a two-year period. So I had the opportunity to work with the top 110 to 130 medical aesthetic clinics in Canada, and all of them before the 2 years was over, all of them within the first year became what we call triple diamond clinics. So that's reaching a level that some would like to reach, meaning you're busy, you're thriving. And that's how it really started after that series was over.
And what are we talking about for revenue for one of these? When we're talking about top level medical aesthetics, which I say med spa, but forgive me if I'm using the wrong terminology there. I think a lot of people know med spas and medical aesthetics as...
it's the same. I call it...
Harder to spell online though.
Yeah, exactly. I call it med spa literally because it's shorter to say. What's interesting though is medical aesthetic clinics used to object to be calling med spas.
Okay.
Like object. There was a hierarchy.
Yeah.
And when I thought about chatting with you today on the podcast, I thought, oh my gosh, I hope Josh's audience does not tune out when they hear med spa. Because it's all about the fluffy, pretty, you know, padded. Like, we're not that. We're a serious medical business. Well, I can tell you for many, many years, it would not be a good idea to call any of my clients a med spa. They were a dermatologist, a plastic surgeon, a laser clinic, a medical aesthetic clinic. But what they actually have in common with your group is they do bill healthcare. And in Canada, we hit the jackpot. We have mostly free healthcare. And so many people, Josh, were physicians or practitioners who were billing the healthcare system, which is the equivalent of insurance. And I mean, that tap just runs. There's going to be 0 days after when people don't need healthcare.
Right.
But many of them said, hey, I would like to go into medical aesthetics or cosmetic medicine. And yesterday I was a guest podcast on someone who does cosmetic acupuncture. And we talked about the same thing. That her field rejects because they can't reconcile the fluffy, soft spa side of the med side. Yet here they are together. And many of my clients can't even reconcile that.
Yeah.
So they're more like chiropractors than you think. I've worked with chiropractors who I will take my hat off to you while you gave all these compliments to the field of medical aesthetics. And we absolutely do have patient and client service down pat compared to other specialties. I will tell you that the chiros I worked with, like starting around 2005-06, only because my med spa clients were married to like a chiropractor, it was their cousin or brother, and they said, well, you've helped me, can you help them? And it was interesting to me to say, is what I know applicable? And turns out yes. But what you all have down pat is your systems are actually better than ours.
I think one of the things is the data we got to look at is, I think that there is I think since you were probably dealing with higher end clinics, I think that there is a minimum level of service you must achieve to get to that higher level.
Yeah.
If you never exceed to provide a great customer service experience, I don't think as a chiropractor or many different professions, you can get above that kind of like in the US dollars, it's like 300 to 450,000 of revenue per full-time provider.
Yeah.
You just don't see them rise above that. Then when they install systems, they're often getting to 400,000 to 500,000. If they install multiple systems and then multiple services that don't require a licensed individual, you start seeing the revenue per license skyrocket. And So I wonder what group of chiros you were looking at, because there's also people, I spoke to somebody yesterday who said over the last year, he has gotten 10 new patients over the last year.
Oh.
And that's a tough way to make a living. So
it's tough. There are menopause like that, Josh, in the US. Yeah. The last statistic I heard is, you know, anywhere between 40 and 70% of men's spas in the US after they won't be open in 3 to 5 years.
Wow.
But who is opening, and the accessibility to open that kind of business has changed, of course.
Right.
But I think you make a really good point, because when I think back to those clients, they were already experiencing some success and they wanted to do a bit more growth and a bit more scale. And they were early adopters. They had softwares way before the really great softwares. And when I say softwares, I mean, here we go into it, patient communication. So they hired me to say, can you help us write this? Can you help us understand? We call it the patient flow. Some people call it the patient journey. Is where are the touch points that are important and matter to us and to our clients that is mutually respectful? Yeah. And how might that work? And that was happening in 2005. We're still talking about the same thing and helping clinics with the same thing. And that's where I meet is it does matter that now that patient communication.
Well, I think it's a great point, because I think as the world develops and gets more comfortable with software, it used to be in healthcare, maybe you would use, say, a digital EMR, right? Like an electronic health record. Maybe. So back when I started in 2006, that was maybe half of offices were using it. And now you would be hard pressed to find one that's still on paper charts. Although I do see it in like the Jane group. Hey, I'm coming off paper charts onto Jane. And it's like, I'm sorry, I'm looking at my watch. Do we time travel or something? But anyways, but the core issue that I think you bring up too is you take customer service. There are plenty of customer service softwares. Mm-hmm. And yet software will not save you if you don't have the skill set. So like we sell communication software with Trust-Driven Care. I think it's a great software to communicate with your patients. Awesome. But if your tone is wrong, if you don't inherently say like, how can I make this message feel warm and fuzzy? How can I offer some empathy in my words? Our software is not going to save you. It's not. But if you do have that intent, our software will enhance it. You know, that's probably the way to say it.
Sure. And I do agree with you. I do think Trust-Driven Care is an amazing tool. Yeah. And what we want to be careful about every tool that we use in our business is while we ask, you know, what can it do for us? And that's important to explore those answers. What do we hope and wish it will do for us?
Right.
And I like to ask another question, which is, what are you hoping that it will save you from, protect you from? What are you hoping it will be in front of you? What are you hoping that it will almost hide, avoid, protect, save you from? Because I think to your amazing point about, you know, it's not going to save you, is a lot of people don't explore the conflict between really serving and making money, between patient communication and sales.
Mm-hmm.
Patient communication sounds like it's lovely. It's very non-threatening. Customer service, even nicer. That sounds amazing. I'm going to attach.
You're like, serving people.
To it. Yeah. It's awesome. Serving. Then when you start to talk about email marketing, sales, follow-up, it's like, ooh, that's gross. All those words make my palms sweat. Yeah. I just got super uncomfortable.
Right. And
so I think it's important to unpack those things, because that's what prevents amazing softwares like yours from being used properly and to their full extent for the purpose that the clinic owner wants, because they haven't explored those things to say, well, I'm hoping I can somehow digitally use this software to communicate with our patients. So I don't know. I'd love your accounts and clients, Josh, to need to go through an assessment.
Yeah.
To answer some questions about what are they hoping that this will help them avoid doing. If this was going to, if they were going to purchase an avoidance tool, what are they looking to avoid? And
yeah, I think an easy way to illustrate that would be like, I think most people listening use an accounting software like a QuickBooks or Xero or something like that. And if we were to strip away all the feel good stuff about service and just look at accounting, it's just numbers, right? If you're fraudulent in your approach, if you start out saying, where can I hide money? Where can I do this? Like, the software is not going to save you. But what I understand you're saying, Ildi, is when you say, what is it going to save me from? If you say, I want to sign up for QuickBooks to save me from an audit from the IRS, or I don't know what the Canadian version is, but save me from an audit, you have to then agree to some other non-negotiables. Like, you can't fraudulently hide money and expect it to save you from whatever. And with patient communication, you can't communicate in a crappy way or a spammy way or be overly sleazy and expect it to go well, which some people do. They're like, well, now that I have this ability to send text messages, I'm going to send text messages to anybody ever that's ever interacted with my business in any sense whatsoever. And it's like, that's probably not the best way to do it. It's
probably a bad idea. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, and then it goes south and then they say, well, your software sucks. Like,
no. Okay. But you know what I like to ask clients is, or I really share with them is, in my experience, if people have a level of discomfort talking to a one-to-one patient or client about receiving a text and to watch for it, they will be equally uncomfortable and have discomfort sending one.
Right.
It will not take that discomfort away. So as you know, I like to sit with my clients to explore before they invest like energy and time into all their business moves.
Right.
What they're realistically hoping this will do. And unfortunately, our online world and social media world has tricked us and shown people, I think, a very artificial impression of what these tools, methods, systems, approaches, concepts will do for them. And maybe I just said, oh, things out there are a big lie. However, I've tried to soften that message, Josh, because people don't receive that word well. So what I've transitioned to is saying it's giving you an incomplete picture. And I think now that I've been doing this for, it's my 23rd year with all kinds of clinics. I mean, definitely medical aesthetic clinics have been the core, I would say 80 to 90%, but then all the rest of it is anything from dental to optometry to chiro to acupuncture. I still have spa and salon clients because they have all of us beat on all levels of service, and they do. There's lots to learn. I love those two industries.
Yeah.
You think hairdressing is fluffy things? I'll just tell you, it's one of the, like, to your point about money. Many of my clients are making over $1 million in their first year.
Right.
So
no student loan debt. They didn't have to achieve some professional license that took $500,000 to get to. My niece almost went into dental school, and dental school right now, they quoted her $600,000 from start to finish. $600,000 in US. Yeah. So in Canada, it'd be $750,000.
That would be $4 million here.
Yeah.
No.
Can you imagine?
It's troubling. You know why? Because now, you know, I have long relationships with my clients. So I see their lives. I'm here to support their lives. And I see what that student debt does to their sleep at night, decisions they make. And I know you and I were talking about a couple of things we do. And I think I'm here to help people make better decisions in their life and in their business. And we just, both you and I think, do that through our...
Can we dive in? I mean, I think it would be great if we can talk about some of the more difficult things. I have one of the subjects I've learned from you, or the phrasing you use, I think is top notch. So Ildi, real quick before we move on, Ildi's company is called Results Continuum. You can find it at resultscontinuum.com. And the way Ildi operates is a consultative method. So if you are interested in her services email her, set up a time to talk, and she will talk much like we're talking right now. And she might even ask you, what are you hoping to avoid with my coaching? But
I 100% will.
Yeah. So I know that you have the kind of flagship 10-month program, the Clinic Transformation. And one of the pieces of that I always hear you talk about that I think is one of those areas that creates like this friction, which is the, you expect that everybody in the business is selling, yes. Right? Everyone sells, but that doesn't mean that everybody is a sleazy salesperson. It means that anytime we have, well, why don't you explain what you mean? Because I interpret to mean like if we have the solution, the front desk could recommend that solution as much as the doctor, as much as the assistant, as much as the nurse, as much as everybody, but we have it. Don't hold back. But what does it mean to you?
First of all, yes, your definition is right. And we like to say, how do we nurture a positive everyone sells culture in our clinic? And when I say a positive everyone sells or everyone sells culture, clinic owners, 100% of them, 100% of the time, especially the ones that work with me, that resonates. They're like, yes, that's what I want.
Right.
At the same time, when I go to that clinic and I ask nurse Ashley or Kathy at the front to tour me around, and I'll say, tell me a bit about what you do here. And I see you have these services and products. Tell me, how does that get to your patient? I will, 70% of the time or more, hear the following statement. Oh, we don't sell here. We don't sell here, period. Or we don't sell here, we educate. And you and I know, and that's a whole other podcast, we hide behind educating. Now, you and I are teachers. We're educators in all kinds of ways.
Ildi, I might be doing this right now in my life, so keep going, sister. This is hurting, but go ahead.
So far, we are not only hiding behind. Now, if you look at that and now we're sitting with our therapist or psychologist, it sounds like people are attaching moral value to selling and sales. We don't do that. We don't murder people here. We don't harm people here. And we don't sell here. What?
I think there's another layer too that I would love to address in this conversation where we talk about this friction is when, if there's a situation where the owner is in the clinic and has actively been trying to sell, and then they see a customer interact with an employee and that employee actively doesn't sell or doesn't offer the solution. So like I owned a clinic gym, right? And I remember talking to the front desk person. I'm sorry, the front desk person was talking to a patient and the patient was like, yeah, I'm looking for a gym, blah, blah, blah. And she says, yeah, well, whatever, 24-hour fitness is down the street. And I was like,
wow, what? That's
it hurt. So and it develops. The problem is, it's not just that I lost the customer. It develops a resentment because I felt like that front desk person feels like our product is not good enough to brag about, to push, to offer, to sell, or even say, hey, let me walk you through our place. We've got a great gym. Sure, it's a premium price product, but let me show you why it's that. And I'm like, I was standing there just blown away. Like, what do you, and I, you know, emotionally, like, do you hate us? Like, do you not believe in what we're trying to do? Have I not shared the mission and all that? And so now there's this friction with that employee because I think they're wearing somebody else's jersey, you know? And so it's not just that I lost the revenue. I lost something else that was more painful than that.
I love that example, Josh, because in that one example, you showed the storm of business, leadership, dynamic with your team, and sales culture, and everyone positive, everyone sells culture.
Right.
Is a perfect example. And those go on and on. So now you didn't just lose that business. Now you use the word a resentment builds. And you want to know when resentment builds? When you look at your payroll and how much you pay people every month or your payroll the entire year and go, how can it be that I've hired all these people to help me grow or contribute to this business? But me, the owner, the clinic owner, is the one rowing the hardest. And I will mention, I've also been a clinic owner. So I got involved and literally married to one of my clients and then became a clinic owner after serving that clinic for 10 years. And we came from 8 to 22 team members, and we became top in services in Canada for many of the things that we did in a really short time period. And then we sold it in 2019, 4 months before pandemic. Phew.
Whew, nice exactly. Timing.
So how did we produce those results so quickly?
Yeah.
I brought all of my collective experience, and applied it. So we shortened the timeline because there was less trial and error and there was less variance in that trial and error. And that's how we did it. And I don't gatekeep. I literally teach it. And I've been teaching that for years. But you know, the example you gave with everyone's cells, this is what I'd love us to pay attention to. It's not just the we educate. I think as practitioners, as clinics, we are way oversaturating ourselves. We are hiding behind our own education and learning. And I am a person like you, Josh. We provide paid programs, paid fee-for-service consulting, fee-for-service coaching. It costs money, although we do quite a few free things through the year. And I am going to ask people, like, stop signing up for things that are going to teach you something that will save your business and find a group like yours, like ours, that you can live with for an extended period of time. And that, I mean, specifically 10 months to 24 months to stay with a coach, with a consultant, with a software in an environment where you're learning and stop spending money signing up for like the next thing that you think is going to save you. So an everyone sells culture means understanding and remembering that the only reason we are here, we're actually not here to heal. Sometimes we can do it, sometimes we can't, but we're here to solve a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. We're here to provide solutions. That's it. If you do it through educating, great. But in this day and age, lots of our clients have appropriately even educated themselves.
Oh, yeah. They're on YouTube and Google and they've consumed 28 hours of education about
this. In the end of the day, if somebody doesn't swipe a credit card or give a check or whatever, and you object to that, you're like, oh my gosh, you know, we're doing transactions here. Yes. If you feel a resistance to that, I'm just not sure that person should be in business. So the perfect example from our collective field is the ratio of product knowledge or specialty training to non-product knowledge specialty training. And what you see in all clinics is a ton of product knowledge training or practitioner
the specialized kind
specialized.
Of
spots. It's about a product, it's about a treatment, it's about a service. What you don't see is what we call core skills. So if it's okay, Josh, I'm going to give like a specific example here.
Sure.
So product knowledge, so PK plus an offer, an event, putting that product or service onto a menu will equal revenue. So do product knowledge training on a particular product or treatment plus an event, an offer, doesn't have to be discounted, but something that you're going to offer equals you will sell some of it, called revenue. Okay. When you add to that formula just one thing and say, and we put it on a graph, Josh, just so you know, like we love a number. We love our numbers here. You all see numbers. I see behaviors. That's what we're doing. We're teaching behaviors in relation to systems or ways of working in clinics to produce profit, which is different than revenue.
Sure.
Well, when I do the graph, if a clinic 4 times a year did product knowledge training or treatment knowledge training, and they added it plus to a service or treatment, they made money. Maybe they sold 2 of them, but likely they sold 20 of them.
Well, our mutual client, she took a tool, combined it with an offer, and I think in like 5 days from signing up with us, she had brought back like $20,000 in revenue because she took that exact equation you're talking about.
Exactly.
However, had a product.
She did the other one. That's what y'all see on the outside. Treatment or product knowledge training plus an offer service equals revenue. And it will produce a lovely upward graph. But if you really want to accelerate that graph, and this is what our client did, to a client, you do PK knowledge plus core skills plus an offer. And that
Okay.
Mega revenue. And what is a core skill? So can you give me an example, Josh, of what kind of product knowledge or treatment knowledge training might some of your clinics or audience clinics go to?
Yeah, I think a lot of our listeners.
And in service.
Yeah. A lot of our listeners, you know, want to offer exercise. And a lot of clients are nervous to exercise when they're coming out of injury. Mm-hmm. And so we might say like, hey, it's really important that you learn to do deadlifts or hip hinges, we call them, right? Yeah. And that's an area where clients are scared to death of doing that exercise. And we need to coach them on it. And I think a lot of people listening coach their team and their trainers and their chiropractic assistants and how to do that exercise. But what they do is they treat it as just a nice aside and not like this is our keys to unlocking a future program.
Love it.
So if that helps, I would love to go from there.
How do you do that particular exercise correctly? Where does it fit in? How can you make like a foundation of where we're going to go? So let's say that you do an in-service training with your own clinic team to show you. Or let's say you invite somebody in, a guest, virtually, whatever. That is what we call the product knowledge or the technical training. Then plus core training. So some kind of core skill would be things like what happens when you teach someone and they don't track or they don't do them? How do you overcome that resistance? So that could be how to form healthy habits. So I taught them the technical exercise. Now let's add the core skill of what are some ways to help people develop healthy habits that stick. Maybe it's going to be habit stacking. And it's a small concept that says you're going to do a new habit where you do an existing habit. So if I make coffee every morning, I put my vitamins where the coffee is. So I take my vitamins right after the coffee.
Mm-hmm.
If you put that out into the world, you will sell more of it. And that's what our mutual client's been taught to do. She's one of our alumni in our programs.
Yeah.
Because she's realized that her peers all doing technical product treatment-based training, putting it out on their website, putting it out on social media, putting it out in text wherever, and then it sold. What she did was, because a lot of people, that offer got sold because lots of people called the clinic. Well, can you imagine, to your point, if they called and the person on the phone had major, major resistance to selling and educated? So what's happened, and I see this a lot in clinics, the people who answer our phones are incredibly friendly. They're incredibly professional. Like I'm giving all the check marks, but they have become information providers. So if you ask in surveys, in patient surveys, were they friendly? Were they timely? Were they efficient? Were they professional? Everyone's like, yes, strongly agree, strongly agree, strongly agree. Did they solve your problem or answer your question? Starts to get much, much lower because offered the person to come in and said, Dr. Satterlee's actually available next Tuesday if you're interested to come see him. And instead of leaving invitation or offer to the end, we say it closer to the beginning. Why? Because when you do core sales training, we find out that really great, ethical, authentic, grounded salespeople who want to help educate and heal, they talk about money, time, the finances early and often. However, if we said, hey, come and do this sales training, your staff or maybe everyone's going to call in for a sick day.
Yeah.
So when we put that into the construct of a consult or the construct of that busy, busy person at the front who's answering the phone, it starts to be received differently where they see they're not failing in their role, but they are not completing that patient journey where if you can't answer the question, did you invite that person in? Did you offer that person an opportunity to come in? Most people, Josh, when I ask them, those people who work at the front, even 80% of the time, they'll say, actually, no, I didn't. I talked to them for 7 minutes or 2 minutes or 12.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, now that you mention it, no, I don't think I did. And it isn't because they're not wearing our jersey. It's because nobody's shown them how, and then technically, and then given them the space to interject their true self into that style of selling or educating or inviting. And what I mean by that specifically is we can give a script, and we do. We mostly give bullet points, But then we like group dynamics and situations to say, okay, we're going to go around and let's try. There's seven of us. For seven of you, what would be your way or style in this scenario of inviting the client to come see us and book an appointment? And when you hear all seven, people are good and their brains are geniuses. And they'll go, oh my gosh, I love how Manda said that. Say it again, Manda. What was that word you used? Okay, great. Right.
So we call it the eyebrow raisers. Like if you're with a client or a patient and they go, oh, it's like, remember what you just said.
No example. So years ago, I used to bring administrative staff together from clinics and we used to do what we called front desk training over a one-day seminar. And I did that in 1 year, I think we had 325 front desk people or the equivalent attend. And by far on our evaluation forms, you know, we're evaluation freaks, by far the two highest rated things were actually technically getting showed how to do this. Like, let me see it, let me hear it, let me that. And the second one, which was equally high, like 9.9 out of 10, was what we called the peer circle, which is we did a quick round robin style of various concept tech techniques.
Yeah.
One was actually answering the phone. So they would literally go around and we used to have this pretend fake phone. Like, remember the ones that we held like this? Because Blackberries were out, but that's how early we started.
Yeah.
And people did it. And they're like, oh my gosh, I love how Leslie answered the phone. And I knew you were supposed to say that, but it felt gross. So then you try it. You try and mimic how Leslie answered the phone. So two things will happen. Because it's new, it may feel uncomfortable, but you say, hey, if you practice it, do you think it'll get better? Some people say yes, but we have to give them the honest space, Josh, to say no. No. And I say, okay, well, instead of this word, can you think of another word? Instead of saying, if you were to have this adjustment and start this exercise program, how would it impact your life? Impact. Like, I'm not changing the world. It sounds good when Josh says it, but I can't say it. What about the choice of, you know, if you were to go ahead and get started on this exercise program and adjustments, what would it change for you? Those are the same things, but you said it in your words and I said it in mine. And giving people the time, space, and experience to do that so they can be more of themselves at work versus robotically following our instructions is that's what I meant by incomplete pictures. Our mutual client does that now consistently with her staff. She has core training that she does in really, really small amounts. And when we say do treatment training or product knowledge training plus core skills, plus an offer, service, event, if you do specials, go for it. That equals way higher revenue than even the first scenario. I'm literally talking 20 minutes, Josh. It does not have to be a project.
One of the things that I've learned as a boss that I think you're also, you haven't stated it outright, but when you take the time to invest in your team and elevate them, they don't build resentment in this idea that they're being held back. And a lot of times your lowest ranking employees will often feel that when other people get more freedoms, right? Typically in any organization, the higher up the food chain you are, the more freedom you have with your schedule. You can change the schedule at the last minute. You can cancel patients, reschedule patients. That front desk person can't be like, hey, Ildi, I'm just taking a me day. I'm going to reschedule my shift. We're like, what? That's not allowed. So there's a lot of lack of freedom there. But what I have found certainly is if you invest in them and you invest in their skill set, their willingness to stick around, their willingness to work hard, their willingness to invest themselves in that job are so much higher than if you don't train them and periodically give them financial raises. One of them is like you're using the dollars as a proxy. It never works. In my experience, basically, anytime you're getting an argument about dollars with any staff member, you've lost. There's some other core problem and they're using dollars as a stand-in for that. But I think that's the other thing is like, go ahead.
When you say it doesn't work, it does. It just doesn't last.
Okay.
Yeah. It actually, a lot of the time you give someone, and I'm going to go big here, like a $5 raise, maybe you're catching up on some past raises. It absolutely does work. It just, it doesn't last. And that's why you are still right. It doesn't work because it's not sustainable. But
right.
There still is some good and truth in the example you provided, which is paying attention to the finances, the financial relationship you have with that person, to make that so stable that it doesn't have to become, you don't have to be cornered on Friday, Josh, I work so hard, I haven't had a raise in a while. And you're like, it's Friday afternoon and I can't even think right now. But you're absolutely right. And when we say investing in team, I just want to appreciate how overwhelming that can sound and feel to a clinic owner who has all these other things to do. And one of the things around nurturing that team is people say, Ildi, I did not sign up for this. And I know you and I have talked about our three-step process that we use: know yourself, know your team, and then work towards the goal. And for solo practitioners listening, team is your network. That's your relationship with your software, your vendors, you know, coaches and
referrals, referral sources, all the same.
Yeah, so nobody's exempt. No one's like, oh, I don't have a team. That's not for me. No. And to your point, people who do one and two first, know yourself, which is building, like making an extreme commitment to building self-awareness and behaving accordingly. Mm-hmm. People who make a commitment to knowing their team and understanding how to leverage them. So even if you had a 2 hour a week VA and you're a solo practitioner, understanding how to use what you have, your one room, your software, and your 2 hour a week VA, how do you leverage it and make the most of it? And then you work towards the goal. It's self-team, then goal. And in my experience and all our data, all our case studies, people who do one and two do better and more with goals. It's not because they set better goals. It's because they have better behaviors from working on one and two, and they behaved their way to that goal more smoothly or easily.
Which goes back to something, I mean, we need to do a part two, because this is, I just looked at the clock. I can't believe we're talking for almost an hour. It feels like 5 minutes that we're barely scratching the surface. But here's one thing I just want to bring up. I know your program, the clinic transformation, is 10 months.
Yes.
And I hope everybody can see after what you just talked about is to know yourself, know your team, and then work towards the goal. That's not going to happen by hiring anybody for 2 weeks or 1 month, right? Because people take time. And I always say, like, imagine your staff is trying to get your kids to say please and thank you. If you accomplish that in a week, let me know and I'll take you to dinner, because I don't know that, right? It's one of those things.
I'll author their book.
Yeah. It's like you've said it 1,000 times and they just maybe once stopped, turned and said, oh yeah, thanks. And you're like, oh my God. But it just takes time. Yeah. And with a good coach or a good program, it's great because they can come back to the next meeting and say, Ildi, I want to share something. We tried that. It worked great 5 times in a row. And the 6th time, we got our butts kicked. It sucked. It hurt. It was this. It went like this. What happened?
Yeah.
That ain't going to happen in a month. It's not going to happen in a 90-day period. I mean, you'll get started in 90 days, but really it takes the bulk of a year to get there. And then, like you said, and really it takes 3 years. I mean, if you really want to get to a clinic that has systems that everybody is using that have been refined and polished, get to a system where everybody can sell, everybody's actively selling. Little asterisk there that I'm sure you learned from your days in the hotel. One of the problems with sales is, can you fulfill at the level of service you've promised if everybody's selling? Because one of the insulators is if one person's selling and you're barely delivering on that, you don't want everybody selling. I mean, like, exactly. You're going to create headaches. And I've been in that situation. We have oversold ourselves and it sucks. But anyways, you're looking at a 3-year transformation. Now, what are you looking at? Like you said, what are the things you're hoping to avoid? You're getting to a point where this thing's running with or without you, whether you're in Hawaii for 2 weeks or you're selling, and you know it's not chaotic. It's not a giant hairball spinning around, regardless of the dollars it makes. I've seen $5 million a year clinics that were whirling hairballs of misery. And nobody in there looked happy.
Maybe that was their revenue, $5 million, but what was their profit? Because I'll tell you, for your audience, in med spas, the average med spa is making between 6 and 15 cents, 1-5, on the dollar. Everybody's trying to get to 25 cents on the dollar. The highest I've ever seen in my career was 42 cents on the dollar ever in 23 years.
So if they're bringing in $1 million of revenue, the best you've seen brought in 420,000 of profit.
To go into the bank to have things to do with.
Right.
After everything was paid off.
So 50% is out of this galaxy. Like it's like not even worth
it. I always say it may exist. I haven't seen it. I work with a lot of other coaches and consultants, which I really like to make a distinction with the two, you know, consulting is having a look around, assessing and making specific recommendations. Coaching is a different process of helping you learn how to arrive at answers. And I believe that you need both. And I'm so happy to hear you say it takes 3 years. It sounds like a long time. It's 36 months. And in hopefully the trajectory of your practice, which may be 10, 15, 20 years, it's a short amount of time, but it's an intense amount of time. And I always want people to feel supported. I've been a business owner. I've been a clinic owner. Yeah. I see what my clients go through. And I see that vacation in Hawaii. And my client saying, Ildi, my wife is about to divorce me. My family is not really even speaking to me because something's come up at the clinic. And when I say something like, Josh, I have worked with so many people, like I've had people whose clinics literally burned to the ground. I've had people drop dead of heart attacks. Like I have seen the full scope of life. Really traumatic things happened to us in life. Yep. And when I ask, what was the urgent thing at the clinic that happened that took you away off the ski hill and you told your family to go skiing without you or whatever? They are not urgent things. They are things that feel urgent because they didn't prepare. And prepare doesn't mean like too cool for school, you're skiing, but it means that conversation's 30 minutes to put a plan in place because you may have even rehearsed what would happen if you got hacked, what would happen if you literally couldn't pay your bills and somebody's threatening to turn something off or hold something back that you literally need for your next appointment or next week.
Right.
What if you ran out of money? Like all of those scenarios. And that's where, and I admire what you're doing with your audience is it's not only important to be in a program or like trusted learning space that actually is teaching you business, not just rah-rah motivation. So you don't feel like you have to do everything yourself, but it's important to be in community. And I think that's what like programs and communities like both of ours do. Is there's a huge component, essential component to understanding the theme of you are not alone. And if that's too touchy-feely for your audience, the theme of, and how do others do it?
Right.
We are so isolated in this. So I have found myself describing clinic transformations as solving the problem of isolation for
the 100%,
owner. It's solving
that. Because it's not weird for me to say in that group, Ildi, I saw my front desk staff not sell the gym and I resent her for it. I'm angry. This is something that other people go through and three quarters of the room to say, I've not that exact situation, but I have something similar. Let's talk about it.
Or that exact same situation. Like, and I'm here to tell you in reality with that real example. And you've been in our group before you finish the example and sentence, people are on fire.
Heads are nodding.
And I don't care about my curriculum. I just tell people to open their mics and say, we have got your back, Josh. And at the moment, the most important thing is being validated because you're going to see a clinic that's been open for 18 years and is profitable. And they still hired a person who they overheard on the phone saying, oh, I'm so sorry. No, we don't have that here. Okay. Thank you so much. Call back if you have any questions. Bye. I'm like, where is the alternative? Like, were they calling for a dozen donuts and
I had a front desk staff and I have a recording somewhere I should share it with you. It's the shortest conversation. Hey, do you guys accept my insurance? No. Just silence after that. And it was like, okay, well, thanks. And they click. And I'm like, you want to just scream. So anyways, well, Ildi, we should do a part two, maybe part three, four, six, 90, 94. I've super enjoyed talking with you. For people that resonated with what you said, that want to get started, are interested in building this out, taking the long approach, how can they kind of meet with you, discuss it, and find out if they qualify, if they're really the kind of fit for you, and you decide the same. How can they get a hold of you?
And thanks, Josh. The best way is to email me, Ildi, I-L-D-I, at resultscontinuum.com, or find me online and literally email me. That's why you'll see my email.
Right.
Let me know that you're part of Josh's community. And we will very, very quickly figure out together who you are and where you are right now. And I could tell you, we have some what I call break glass options, because some people need help on specific topics now, and they are short-term solutions. Yeah. So they need a break glass. Those are available. Some people are looking for more a partner to help grow their clinic. And other people are in it for the longer game, and they're running busy clinic and busy lives. So for them, stretching it out over 10 months plus 2 months makes sense. And we'll figure that out together very quick through a series of questions that they'll answer.
And some people just, I'm sure, are not, it's just not going to, there's nothing that really would fit. And that's
exactly. However, I know lots of great people like you, Josh, and you and I know lots of great people mutually. Yeah. So this isn't just about how can we work together? Like, tell me. Mm-hmm. And I will connect you. And if I can't, I'll call in Josh. I'll call whoever. We have extensive networks.
Right. But what I Which is like a good medicine, right? Is like, if you come in with a condition I don't treat, I do know who's good to, who 100%. Would treat you well, and I trust them. Like, when people would hear like, oh yeah, I you know, so-and-so is really good, and I've actually had lunch with them and spoken to them, the reassurance and the confidence in that referral is so much higher.
And that's everything. Yeah. Some people need a new accountant, and my network is huge of really excellent, reliable people who it'll save you time from searching out in the internet.
Sure.
So whatever help, I would love to hear from acupuncture clinics about anything. I'd love to hear what's going on. And if I can't help, I'll find a way for someone else too.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Ildi, this has been an amazing conversation. I've very much enjoyed it. I hope my listeners have gotten a ton of value out of this. With that, as I always say, this is Dr. Josh Satterlee saying, go out there, maximize your license, and live the life you dream of. Ildi, thank you so much for the time today.
It was such a blast. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks a lot for listening to Clinic Gym Radio. If you're looking for more information about me, about us, about our programs, then just head to clinicgymhybrid.com. Again, that's clinicgymhybrid.com. You can check us out there. We've got our accelerator program and a few other programs that will help you get up and running as quickly as possible and making more money while providing excellent active therapy to your patients.